The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Ron Paul is doing well increasingly in polls of Republicans for the Republican presidential nomination. And here on Bob Enyart Live, we have agreed with many pro-life leaders, including, for example, Mark Crutcher of Life Dynamics, the publisher of MAFA 21, who wrote an article in WorldNet Daily that abortion is not a states' rights issue and why abortion is not. Ron Paul says that abortion is a states' rights issue. So to talk about that in particular, that question, there is a pro-lifer from Michigan, Kerry Morgan, who's an attorney. He's run for the U.S. House. And I'd love to invite Kerry onto the program. Kerry, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Great to be here.
Kerry, could you tell us about yourself first, and then we'll get into this topic of abortion and whether or not Ron Paul is correct that this is a states' rights matter.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing law in Michigan here for about 30 years. I was formerly with the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights in Washington, D.C. under the Reagan and the first Bush administration, and then came back here and started practicing law again. I've done a lot of civil rights litigation. I represent municipalities and do labor and arbitration and all kinds of good, fun law. We also do constitutional law, got a background in the historical basis of this country, the Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, Constitution, and I'm fairly familiar with the position of the state, these kinds of things. So I think I can bring some good points to the conversation.
All right. Well, Kerry, and thank you for joining us. Since you know that we disagree, I'd like to start out. We're going to talk about whether or not abortion is a states' rights issue. Of course, abortion is the killing of an unborn human being, a fetus. For starters, a fetus, what do you believe a fetus is? And do you believe that a fetus has God-given rights and inalienable rights?
Yeah, I think that an unborn child, once they're conceived, is a living human being, and as such has an unalienable right to life that no government or person is empowered to deprive them of.
Yes, yeah, so, and with that, you agree with Ron Paul in his profile at prolifeprofiles.com/Ron Paul. You could just click on his sketch on the homepage of that website. There's a quote from him. He said, "I see the fetus as a human being that has legal rights," and he refers to abortion as murder, and he says, "We do not have the right to murder our children." And he said, "Intellectually, you can't distinguish between the killing of an infant a minute before birth and a minute afterwards," so that you're agreeing with Ron Paul and with me, and I like American Right to Life's article, The Bible and Abortion, What Does the Bible Say About Abortion? And they show, I think, emphatically that the scriptures represents the baby in the womb as a child, and that child has all the rights of an innocent human being.
Yeah, I don't think there's really any argument among us about that. It's pretty clear that God is the one that opens and closes the womb, that he He's the one that causes the child to come into existence after, procreation, and that the child once conceived is always going to be a child, if not going to turn into something else or a blob of this or that. And so, you know, the biblical arguments, I think, are fairly solid. I don't find any objections to those. And I think Ron Paul recognizes that as a physician. He's done a lot of deliveries, and he realizes it from a reality point of view as well.
So we know that Ron Paul disagrees with the U.S. Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade opinion. And, of course, that law is responsible in part for the killing of tens of millions of children in America. Of course, that killing began years before Roe. In the 7 years before Roe, 19 states permitted abortion for various reasons, including New York for pretty much any reason, abortion on demand. Ron Paul has said that a federal law banning abortion across all 50 states would be as equally invalid as Roe v. Wade itself, and so he would oppose a federal ban on killing children in the womb. This is where we get to his states' rights position, and he believes that while he says the unborn child has the God-given right to life, that's where the right to life comes from, he thinks that the states have the right, states' rights, to determine whether or not abortion will be legal within their jurisdictions. So could you address that?
Sure. I think the issue is, do the states that is acting through the people that elect the legislatures of those states, is abortion a matter which is really a issue that it should be addressed in the states? If you back up and you have a view of the Constitution, the federal Constitution that says, like the Constitution does say, Congress is merely a one branch of that government, and it only has those powers which are specifically granted in the Constitution. If Congress doesn't have the power in Article 1, Section 8, they don't have the power, no matter how good the purpose or object may be. The whole notion of the federal government is that it's a government of limited, well-defined, and narrow powers, and that the reason we have this is because we don't particularly care for a strong, powerful central government in this country, according to the framers of the Constitution. And the residual power of government lies within the states. So in the instance of abortion, for instance, you know, the states have historically adopted laws in the 1850s and 60s under the leadership of somebody like Horatio Storer, which was both a medical doctor and a lawyer. And Storer went state to state, and he got the AMA, essentially, as well as the state legislatures.
And the New York Times.
To, in fact, protect unborn life in the womb as they understood it at that time. And so why did he go to the states? He went to the states because he was a lawyer that actually believed the Constitution never gave the federal government one lick of authority to enact a general criminal code punishing these kinds of offenses, and that these powers were and always have been within the state governments since the colonial period. So, you know, and I think he did it as a physician and as a Christian because he believed it was the right thing to do, and it was also medically warranted that you had to protect unborn life in the womb.
So we have two different sources of authority that are in this conversation. One is God's principle, since we're all agreeing that the right to life is inalienable and it comes from our Creator God. And the second is the U.S. Constitution, which, of course, comes historically way after the fact, long after God said, "Thou shalt not murder." So we could look at both. Of course, the Constitution in the 5th and 14th Amendments states explicitly that no person shall be deprived of life without due process, that is, unless convicted of a capital crime. In the 14th Amendment, nor shall any state deprive any person of life without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. so that by the Constitution, the state of Texas could not, for example, decriminalize the killing of Mexicans. Even if illegal immigration becomes horrendous in Mexico, the state of Texas would be violating the U.S. Constitution if it permitted the killing of innocent people, that is, the killing of people who have not been convicted of a capital crime. So we have the Constitution and its authority that we could evaluate, but then we have God and God's command, thou shalt not murder, which he gave to all men, to families, and to nations. There are hundreds of countries in the world, Kerry, and they all have different constitutions. And when God looks at a nation and judges it for allowing the shedding of innocent blood, if Germany, for example, if they had laws at the state level and in their districts and states where they were going to gas the Jews and bury them alive and kill the Jews, but it was not a federal matter, there is no way that God would give a pass to the nation of Germany because it was only a state matter. If innocent people are being systematically killed, forget about by a state, but by a country, then other countries have the right to use the force of war to go in and stop that bloodshed. So if you have the systematic slaughter of Jews, for example, if you have genocide, then other countries have the right to go and depose that despotic government, that murderous government, and stop the slaughter. So would you agree there, first of all, that regardless of the way that a country's laws are written, if that country is slaughtering the innocent, then they're violating God's law and they open themselves up to international sanction or the use of force?
No, I don't think that's a correct statement. I think you have to understand that there's no inconsistency between the command, thou shalt not murder, and the limited authority which the people established the federal government for.
Well, Kerry, I just asked you about Germany. Could we broaden the subject for a moment, and then we'll get to the U.S. Constitution? But to broaden the subject, when a government begins to systematically permit the slaughter of the innocent or itself slaughter the innocent, as in Germany, is that a violation of the oldest law known to man, thou shalt not murder? When Cain murdered Abel, God indicates that this is criminal.
Well, it's interesting, and so you should use the Cain versus Abel, because when Cain did kill Abel, it was clear it was a crime.
Right.
It was clear it was murder. It was clear it would violated the law of God.
Right.
But the second question, never really discussed and always assumed, is who had the right to punish Cain?
Well, before the
God
flood,
God himself said, I only have the right to punish Cain. Later on, he gave that authority to men.
Right, Kerry. Before the flood, God prohibited the death penalty, and the earth became filled with violence. Immediately after the global judgment, God said that everyone who sheds blood, by man his blood shall be shed. And so from then through the New Testament, God commanded the death penalty for murderers. So when Germany started slaughtering the Jews systematically, it's public policy. Is that a states' rights issue? Does Germany say, we're an independent state and we have the right to do this? So it's none of your business, France or England. It's none of your business. Do they have the right to do that as a country, as a state?
Well, certainly no state has the right to kill its own people without, so much as a by your leave, without any due process, without any trial.
Right. So it's not as
a country, but let me finish.
Yeah.
But that does not give another country the power to invade that country to do what is right.
All right. Well, you and I disagree completely on that, and I do think this is a symptom of the Ron Paul error, that we would have to adopt a worldwide strategy of apathy for genocide, the slaughter of millions of innocent people, men, women, and children. We'd have to say, well, it's a state's right. If Germany wants to kill Jews, or if Texas wants to kill Mexicans, there's really nothing we can do as neighboring governing authorities.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we don't have the power to invade another country and kill the government to assassinate the government, to wipe out that government, and to put our own little puppets in place or have democracy.
Well, puppets, right. God doesn't say in the Bible, put puppets in place.
I would also say there's no biblical basis for one country to go into another country in terms of these kinds of issues. You know, this is sort of the Bush doctrine of preemptive war. This is the post-isolationist theory of progressivism that came up and said, you know, the policeman of the world is the United States, and we have a right to go into any country and do... not any biblical base for that.
Just war is grounded in biblical principles.
When you're attacked, fine, but what does that have to do with interfering with lawlessness?
Well, Abraham wasn't attacked, but his nephew Lot, who I don't know how well they got along, his nephew Lot was kidnapped by foreigners and taken away, and Abraham raised up an army, and he went after them, and he used force, and I doubt when he caught up with them, I doubt that he flogged them. He made sure everybody was armed with a sword, and Abraham became a favorite of God's. So when the innocent are being systematically killed, to say that the nations of the world would have to stand back and let the Germans slaughter every man, woman, and child who is Jewish in their borders because it's wrong to intervene, I think that is a corruption of Christian morality. God in the Bible is a God of war, and he's also a God of peace, and it is completely corrupt. God says, in fact, that if there's an innocent person who's killed nearby you, if he's killed nearby you, and you haven't done everything you could to stop it, I'm going to hold your governing officials responsible in your city, or you could extrapolate it to in your state, even if that innocent person wasn't killed in your state. You recall right?
What limitation would you suggest that exists on one man killing his neighbor if in his eyes it's right? Why can't I just go in and kill my neighbor if my neighbor's doing something I think violates the law of God?
There's a tremendous distinction between being a vigilante and being a warfare state. You've just asserted there's no distinction.
I've said your argument suggests there is no distinction. In other words, the God
doesn't extend to every man
the power to do right.
Hey, Kerry,
he never extends to every nation the power to do right. And he certainly doesn't extend to one nation the power to go into another nation.
Kerry, Adamir.
Just because it thinks it knows what's right.
Kerry, Adamir.
Put Kerry on hold for a second.
Hey, Kerry, I hope you're willing to have a discussion and don't talk over me. I have guests who disagree and they get a tremendous amount of airtime. We have 50,000 watts, but I'm the host. You're the guest. Please, when I want to clarify or answer something, please pause so I can do that. At American Right to Life's website, there is an entire worksheet on vigilante force, and there's a professor of ethics from California College that has endorsed it and said that in all my career, this is the best material I have ever seen to distinguish the use of force and lethal force between individuals and nations. So there is a Bible filled with principles that address this issue, and nothing I have said indicates that therefore individuals would have the right to kill people they disagree with. So you're wrong, and I could identify the source of error in your thinking. All right, the source of error in your thinking is a libertarian belief that governments only have the authority that individuals have, and that's not true. God has delegated to governments authority that individuals do not have. Our governments and our world, they know nothing of distinctions or the limitations that God has put on them, so they all overstep their bounds. But governments have greater authority than individuals do, and that's explicitly clear, including in the New Testament command that we should respect and obey the governing authorities. The government doesn't have to obey us. God says we have to obey the government to the extent that the government is just. So now, could we get back to this issue? So you are maintaining that Germany could kill every Jewish person in their borders without fear if you were in charge, of a neighboring country, they would have no fear of you intervening with force to stop them from slaughtering all the Jews.
I'm happy to talk about Ron Paul, but if you want to put words in my mouth about foreign affairs in World War II, I'm not going to talk about that.
All right. Okay, you know, so now let's go to Ron Paul and the U.S. Constitution. I think we both presented our position on that matter. So now let's go to the U.S. Constitution. Because I think the states' rights argument is invalid on God's principles and on constitutional principles. Because the Constitution requires that every state provide equal protection of law to every person, and that no person shall be deprived of life without due process. So the government can't say, you could start killing Mexicans because there are too many Mexicans. The government can't do that. If the state government is going to comply with the Constitution, which all of Ron Paul's supporters say is their big issue, well, then the state government would not be allowed to permit the killing of one class of human being. They would not be allowed to decriminalize that because the Constitution states, and you're an attorney, you know this, that no state shall deprive any person of life without due process, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction, that includes Mexicans in Texas, they cannot deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So if Texas said you can kill babies or you could kill Mexicans, Texas would be violating the U.S. Constitution, even on that ground, giving the federal government the authority to stop their murder.
Did you want to talk about Ron Paul and states' rights? Or
The 14th Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, and Ron Paul's claim that he believes we should go by the Constitution and let Texas decriminalize the killing of innocent people. That's
First
what I want
all,
to talk about.
The Constitution is a sets up a national government of limited power. You don't even need to go to the 14th Amendment to find that Congress doesn't have any power over abortion. Okay? It's not there in Article 1, Section 8. So, secondly, if it's not there, then what government in this country has it explicitly? And that's the states have it. They have the residual power in this country to ban abortion. Why can't they do that? They've tried. Here in Michigan, we tried. We executed. We adopted several pieces of legislation. They all get struck down in federal court. What to do? What made abortion a federal question, a national question? It was Roe v. Wade. They took it away from the states, and they made it a national question, and they made it a question for the courts to run. Okay, that's all wrong. The problem with Roe v. Wade is not merely that it took a criminal act, abortion, and converted it into a constitutional right, but it took a matter out of the state criminal code and nationalized it. Now, I don't like Roe v. Wade. I think Roe v. Wade is wrongly decided for both of those reasons. First, that the court doesn't have authority to transform a criminal wrong into a constitutional right. Secondly, there's no basis in the Constitution for this right of privacy broad enough to include the right of abortion on demand, if we're construing the Constitution honestly. And thirdly, it's a state question. Now, we need a remedy. Do we say we'll build on the Supreme Court's nationalization of abortion by having a federal law? I don't think so. I don't think there's a basis for a federal law because it's not in Article 1, Section 8.
Would you strike down a federal law that banned abortion if you had the authority?
Well, let's talk about that. Absolutely. The Roe v. Wade doesn't really have legal authority. Opinions of courts.
I didn't ask you that. I said, would you strike down a federal law that banned abortion?
Who am I?
If you had authority.
As a citizen or as a
If you had the authority.
The president.
If you were a U.S. Supreme Court justice, would you strike it down?
Well, if I would vote to throw Roe v. Wade out.
That's,
I would strike down, I would reverse Roe v.
That's
Wade.
That's not the question, right? I'm asking you the same question Ron Paul responded to. Would you strike down a federal law that banned the killing of innocent children before they were born? Would you strike down that law for your
principle? To strike
it down,
you need five
rights?
Judges on the Supreme Court.
I know. How
Court.
Would you vote, Kerry? Kerry, I feel like I'm debating a liberal. How would you vote? I'm not asking you what these other mythical judges
would say. You're asking sloppy questions, Bob. If you're asking the question of how I would vote, the answer is yes.
You would strike it down.
I would actually go beyond that. Striking down is too weak of an argument.
So you would violate the U.S. Constitution from the preamble through the Fifth Amendment, through the 14th Amendment, on the grounds that you're following the Constitution.
The preamble is not a governing, it's not a delegation of power. So you don't go to the preamble for powers.
Well, the preamble states this: we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice. So anything you did as a federal judge that was unjust, you'd be violating the Constitution.
My power as a federal judge would be derived from Article 3.
And then it says this:
okay,
to provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. If you just look up the definition of posterity, you'll see that a baby sucking his thumb and playing with his toes in his mother's womb, like Lacey and Connor Peterson, who was murdered by his father, that baby was part of our posterity. These 50 million children, 60 million killed by surgical abortion, they're part of our posterity. So the Constitution, from the beginning, from the very first sentence, points to the defense of liberty, the defense of life, including for our posterity. And then in the 5th and 14th Amendments, which it's beside me as an attorney who supposedly wants to uphold the Constitution, that's how we are in this convoluted discussion, that you would say a discussion quoting the 5th Amendment and the 14th Amendment is irrelevant to our discussion.
How about the 10th Amendment? Would you uphold that one too? That reserves the power to the states and to the people, not those not enumerated?
Well, fine,
would
but
you
in the 15th
the 10th
and
Amendment?
The 14th Amendment, it's enumerated.
It's not enumerated.
Well, here, I'll read it again, and the audience could decide if this is enumerated or not. No person, which you agreed, a baby in the womb, sucking his thumb, that baby is a person. He has the right to life. No person shall be deprived of life without due process, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, nor deny equal protection of the law. So you're saying, as a Supreme Court judge, I would allow states to deprive these little children of life and deny them equal protection. Why? Because I believe you have a passion to support a libertarian worldview, not a constitutional worldview and not a biblical worldview, but to support Ron Paul.
Well, you're quite incorrect on that.
Well, could you, we're going to end this show. If you'd like to hang on, we could record and air this on a show, say on Tuesday, your answer to the 5th and 14th Amendments.
Sure. Happy to do that.
That'd be super. All right. Our website is kgov.com. Alan Keyes and Tom Tancredo are heading up the Colorado Right to Life Banquet on September 17th, Saturday, September 17th. That's going to be a lot of fun. And please come on out. You can get tickets at their website, coloradorighttolife.org. And also our website is kgov.com. And check out Ron Paul at Pro Life Profiles.